we've got everybody. Welcome. We're going to talk about Metasploit some more. I think everybody, almost everybody was here last night and caught the basic part. That's me. Basic columnist for ethicalhacker.net, so that's why I'm here. Talk about Metasploit some more. It's kind of what we talked about yesterday, some background, framework interfaces, exploit types, payload types, auxiliary modules, and we did some demos, and they went okay. The SMB Relay one didn't go quite according to plan, but I think we saw that the idea. Where we're going, we're going to talk about interpreter, using the interpreter payload, and if everything goes according to plan, we're going to pivot through an exploited host using the interpreter session. So interpreter is short for meta interpreter. It's an advanced post-exploitation system based on library injection, DLL injection, like we talked about yesterday, the DLL inject. It was first released in Metasploit 2.3. It's been updated, has some new features with MSF3. And there is an interpreter white paper available off NoLogin and the Metasploit site for a lot of really detailed information on how it works. So it does a lot of really cool, neat things that I won't have time to go into. So it's a great tool for post-exploitation. You can do arbitrary command execution. You can execute commands via command.exe shell. You got file access, VNC. But that's kind of thing you could start VNC through it, but usually if you use Meterpreter, you're kind of stuck with the Meterpreter shell and all its functions. Pivoting. Advanced interactions, really anything you can script. So really the question is, I got a shell, now what? What do I do with that? If you're pen testing, you may be able to prove your point with that. You know, I do a DIR and I can see what's in the file, or I'm looking for a piece of data, or I just want to say, hey, this is what I did, I got the output of, you didn't patch your box. If I'm trying to dig into a network, depending on the box, you may be limited. So most people spawn a command shell. Poor automation support, really none. You're relying on what's on the box, and you're limited to installed applications. Really no advanced features. So you're really stuck with what you could do with your /did/start/run command.exe. So kind of some old school ways of doing post-exploitation is I'll echo some FTP commands and download my whatever I want to run. Old school. Second way is if I allow TFTP out, I can TFTP my evil stuff from my TFTP server onto the box. Again, that's stuff so old that very rarely can you do that if they've got any kind of firewall policy in place. So the new school, hey, I can just upload through the interpreter, upload my file and the file name I want to upload it to, done. I don't have to rely on any extra system tools. I don't have to open any extra channels. It goes through the established channel that it's already. That you already have going with the interpreter shell. I can execute files, just execute -f and the file starts up. If I need to do it to a command prompt, execute -f command.exe, your -c gives you channelized, that's so you can actually interact with it. Your -H gives you hidden. If you don't put an H, you'll have a command prompt pop up on you on the victim host. And -i says I want to interact with it immediately after I start. Or I can download. That's kind of the big thing. Is hey, if I find something on that guy's box, I want to have. The other old school way is I got to TFTP it off. I got to FTP it off. I got to, if it's a text file, I can maybe display it to the screen and the console and copy that. But now I can download whatever I want, just using the interpreter. So that's pretty handy. So kind of how it works is after exploitation, the DLL is uploaded to the target. It loads the runtime extensions. Interact with the communications channels, use scripts to automate processes, and the real cool thing is that it completely erases itself on a reboot. Can't tell it's there, it completely runs in memory. Obviously, if you upload things to it, those stay, so any tools or things you use, if you don't want them to be there, you need to delete those prior to exiting your shell. So, 2.x, you used to have to load all the fun stuff manually, your file system, your net commands, your process, your system. By default now, 3.0 will load everything except your priv commands. And that's a simple use priv, I'll show you. you get standard OS features. You can do client-side automation. And you got the Ruby API. So what you can do, I kind of talked about command execution manipulation, registry interaction. I can query, add, delete, view registry keys, file system interaction, you know, upload, download, make directories, remove directories, pivoting, port forwarding, do any kind of scripting you can with the Rex and Ruby API languages. Anything you can do as a native DLL interpreter can do, dump password patches and manipulate file access times. So that's kind of, I'm just going to quickly show you that, and then we'll kind of go through them in the actual command prompt. So you got your core commands, cool things there. You can drop to an IRB shell and do any kind of Ruby scripting. File system commands, cat, cd, download, edit, get working directory, list files, make directories, print working directory, basically just like any of your shell file commands. You can do ipconfig, root, port forwarding. System commands, you can execute commands, get your process ID, UID, what user that you're currently running as. You got a PS, and you can kill processes, reboot, reg, shut down, get system info. The ref yourself is kind of one, it's really good for if you get an exploit with a non-user account, like your IIS account, you can run ref to self, and that's the one that will turn you into system. So that's kind of how they do that dot printer exploit, where you end up being the user, ISS user. You can run rev to self and become system with that. User interface commands. In your priv command, it's got a native hash dump that will run in memory. You don't have to upload pw dump anymore. And time stomp, which manipulates file access times. So it comes with a way cool API to do some scripting. So what you can do like that is can upload and execute my favorite executable with a script. So I called it upload.exe. And basically I tell what file I want to upload, I upload it, and I execute it. And put that in a script, I can just do run upload.exe, and it runs, and it's done. Clear event logs. Basically your key line there says last two at the bottom. I say open the security log and clear it. And I can blank file access times that will kind of defeat some forensics tools. Basically, what we're saying here is we want to blank all the files in Windows System 32 log files, which is your IIS files and some other things, usually. And we can pivot through exploited hosts, which Core talked a lot about for the guys that were here for the Core thing. You can do it for free in Interpreter, but you can only do it through Windows. They don't have a Linux way to do that yet. So basically, we exploit the host, we back around the interpreter session, we add a route through that session, and then we exploit the second host. And there's some links. Big thanks. Like I said, H.C. Moore gave me the bless off the talk, so big thanks to him and all the other people listed. So we got our interpreter, our Metasploit console shell. We're going to use a user interaction exploit. We're going to use this Logitech one. It's basically an ActiveX bug that targets an ActiveX, and it's got overflow in an ActiveX control. So you can see it's got Stack Overflow in the ActiveX control star client.dll. So we're going to set our serve host to our IP address. We're going to set our URI path to fun because Metasploit is fun. We add two targets, so obviously we need to pick which one we're going to run. And I'm going to cheat and know that I'm going to be on an XP Service Pack 1 system. So we're going to set target 0. Make sure I did that right. And we're going to exploit. Oh. Might want to set the payload. That's kind of the whole point. And we exploit. And you can see that it's running as the background job. It's kind of what we did last night. So the idea is now I got to get someone to click on that link and browse to my site that's got that vulnerable ActiveX control. Thankfully, I know that this guy does. So, hey, sure, why not? I'll click for $1 million. I need money. So it's going to do its thing. All the while, in the background, we're uploading our DLLs, our number interpreter DLL, uploading, and we'll wait for our shell. All right, so we got it. And I may have just killed it. Oh, no good. Because we're running one that involves user interaction, it's still running in the background. So if I sent that email out to 100 people, the other 99, I could still hope to click on it, and I could get a few more boxes. That's kind of why if you run it on a single host, it will drop right to your interpreter shell usually automatically. But now, because it's still running in the background, we're going to have to select the one we want. So we're going to sessions-i and 1 to interact with it, and we got our interpreter shell. If everything worked right, you're going to run help, and you'll have all your commands. Sometimes it won't load everything, and all you'll get is your core commands. In that case, you're really going to have to try again. It's kind of hard to do if you're, you know, having someone click on something, but if you're in the lab, it just means that everything didn't upload. There's really not a fix to that except to, you know, hopefully have them re-exploit it. Some of the cool stuff you can do is you can script any Ruby scripting. You can just drop, you can type IRB and drop to an IRB scripting shell, which is pretty handy. Using the migrate command, you can migrate to a process. You have to be careful with that because your interpreter is now attached to that. So say I started calc.exe and I migrate to that. Well, as soon as I kill that, I just killed my connection. So that's never good. Run is what we're going to do to run the scripts, and we'll do that in just a second. Hey, Don, just let me make sure I'm on track with Tom. I don't want to take any time away from Tom. So cat, cd download, all those are your standard Unix type commands. Ipconfig, kind of like we talked about, execute. We're going to do the fun stuff first. We're going to load the priv extension. Great, it worked. Do help again, and you'll get your commands now loaded. So we can do hash dump, and that will immediately dump the hashes. So that's fun. Time stomp gives you a whole lot of options, and you can blank it out, you can change it to what you want, you can change certain things, last written, creation, you know, anything that has to do with file access times, you can manipulate with that. And the fun one is obviously this B option, so in case shows blanks. So other fun stuff is, you know, sysinfo, see what we're running, that's cool. Get UID, tells who was running when they clicked on that. PS tells you what's running. I can kill things if I want, I can start things if I want. Registry allows you to read, write, enumerate. So I can enumerate keys, create keys, delete keys, set values. Like if I want to change a 0 to a 1 or a true to false, something, hey, I do want that to run at startup next time. Great. I can just change that with a... It's a little involved. I can show you after. I probably meant to have it printed out. I'm going to mess it up a few times if I try to do it off the cuff. So brute command will kind of give you the local routing table, so you can see that this one's got, you know, 192 address networks and your 172 networks. What else we got? Is there anything you guys interested in seeing real quick that's catching your eye? So we can do PWD, so we can see where we're at. We're on the desktop, so I can do can make directories. So I got it. You can see that I got it right here. I made the directory. I can cat files. So that's fun. All kinds of fun stuff. All the stuff that we had to do uploading things, we can We can upload. We want to upload. Actually, let's. How about we download ActiveX HTML, and I'll download it to ActiveX.html. Downloaded it. And you see, there it is. It's down in our Metasploit folder. So that's handy. Found something on your box I really wanted to see. I can just pull it down. We can run scripts. Comes with some fun stuff like killav. I had a command.exe running, so that killed that. It's got Norton running things. All that's pretty much defeated now. All that stuff runs as a service. So if you kill it in here, it starts right back up. So you have to do a little more finagling to kill antivirus. That's kind of an old way of killing things. I don't know any of them that will actually die if you do that. They'll still be running. There's some other ways around that. You can change registry keys and then turn off the AV, and then it won't start up. Sometimes you'll get a nice big red X. Sometimes you won't. Things you have to play with and explore. So it also comes with run git local subnets. Boom. That does some little API magic. Tells me that I got these two networks. We can run. I'm just going to get the. I want to show you the log file before I run it. So we can see that we got things in the security log. Again, I wrote a little script called clear sec log. And it's going to run. Done. And we'll come back, do a refresh, and they're all gone. It does leave the 517, which is a normal thing that says, hey, someone cleared the event log on you. There's really no way around that one. The API doesn't support picking and choosing. I iterate through them, but I can't say I want to delete number 6. It's kind of, unfortunately, it's all or none for those. I'm sure they'd love to have someone update the API if that's something that you're into. Yeah. All right, we're getting there, I promise. So what we're going to do is, I just wanted to show you the properties of what we had before. I would see all this stuff was created, you know, Saturday, September 11th, 2004. Same thing I kind of showed you in the slides, the timestamp. We're going to run timestamp XP. So it's blanked everything in that. So that, look again. And now you can see it's been set. In Windows, it's now set to, you know, January 1st, 1601. If you go and look in that with in case it's going to be blanked out, you're not going to be able to pull any data out of that. Not the stealthiest thing, obviously, because, something happened. But you can also change it to whatever you want. You can pick a date, pick a time, change it back to where it was before you messed with it. You know, because obviously if you change something, it's going to say it last modified on this date. You can change it to what it was before you messed with it. You can also do that in the command line as well. Alright, so a lot of fun things you can do with it. So what we're going to do now is hopefully everything's going to work out. We're going to background this. When you background, it's going to drop you back into your MSF console instance. And it has the root command. Basically what the root command says is I can add, remove, git, flush, print the subnet, which is basically the network, the netmask, and the SID is your meterpreter ID. So our meterpreter is running as 1, so we want to, we'll do a root print first to show that we don't have anything there already. I'm going to root add 192.168.1. Thank you. So we're basically telling that class C through 1. And we want to root print again, so that makes sure it took. Great. Now, I'll be honest, there's not any I haven't had any good success with using some of the auxiliary modules to actually discover the hosts on the other end. There's some auxiliary modules that are supposed to work, and we're going to try the SMB version one, and I got a 50-50 chance that it's going to work for us. The other unfun thing when you do this is you lose your tab completion when you background the session and do this. So you go from not being able to do the tab to kind of working, now you kind of got to know where you're going. So if you do it right, so that basically just says it's going to look for any SMB instances running. So we're going to set our remote host to be that other subnet. Then we're going to run it. And hosts. 8. And hopefully we'll get lucky and we'll come up with some stuff running in the background. It's going to take a second. But it should see the .1 interface, which is our first one. Great. Service, we knew that. It's got to get, the other one is .5. I'm cheating because I know it's there. And hopefully that will come up and say that that is also an XP Service Pack 0, Service Pack 1. It does take a little bit of time. Any questions so far while we're waiting for it to do its thing? No? Don?
Can you have it open up?
On the second box or this box?
The first box.
You should be able to do a net send. And that should do it. I'm just trying to give it a second because it should come up. I probably should have labeled that one dot, dot 2. Do what?
Can you do commands to restart it instead of
Yeah, there is actually there is a reboot command. So if you do something that involves having to reboot the box to make it start, like I changed the registry key to make it start at boot, you just type reboot and it's going to immediately go down on you.
You want to be a real thing, you turn off keyboard mouse too.
Yeah. Oh, yes you can. Right here with the UICTL, you can control the keyboard and mouse and you can lock the user out and take control of it. All right, great. There we go. It worked. Stalling worked. So you can see we got 1.5 on the net. On the internal network is running that. So, all right, good. So we're going to do type back to get back to our console. The tough part here, obviously, is knowing what to exploit on the other host. It's not really a good. I don't really have a good way to tell you that. We know it's a Service Pack 1 box, so we kind of talked about in CA's class today. You can narrow your attack scope knowing that. If it's vulnerable to, if Service Pack 2 fixes something, then you know that those exploits should work against that. So it's a little bit of a forced example, but I think you guys can get the idea when we get to shell that it's going to be. Oh wow, it's pretty cool. I can bounce through that. Hopefully. So I'm trying to just load another exploit, the DCOM exploit. This is where it's kind of unfun. It's unfun that you don't have tab completion. So we do info to see what targets, what hosts we have, what things we need to fill in. So we set our remote host to 192.168.1.5. Set our payload. Show our options after we picked our bind shell. Make sure we filled in all the holes there. Great, let's give it a shot. All right, so we got our shell. And we can do ipconfig to make sure that we're on that box. Now, you want to, just to kind of show that it worked, this is our little Metasploit folder that we added. We do a netstat so we can see the connections. You can see there's the second one is us, and then the fourth one is us is that other connection that's being relayed to the other host. From the other host, we do a netstat there and see that indeed we're talking back to 1.1, which is the first host. So that's pretty cool.
There actually is a way to hide that.
Yeah?
With the way that you can actually traverse processes, if you were to you exploit on process X, you traverse another process at the same level as you are, and then you do a forced reboot on that other process, with the way that Windows handles the connections combined with the fact that Metasploit will keep that socket, you will not show up in that set anymore.
Oh.
The only way that you'll show up is if you actually do a PCAP dump on the wire. Windows will not understand it.
All right, I got something to play with.
Yeah,
I'm going to get out of here now. So that concludes it, barring any questions. Like I said, the video's on the disk if you guys want to try later. Also got a write-up on the blog about it, so if you want to try later, there's a write-up. So just want to say thanks. Anybody's got any questions now or after while we're closing up? If not, thanks a lot.